Welcome to Bridge the City, a podcast recorded in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Our mission is to bridge together people, resources, and ideas that inspire Milwaukee to action. And I'm one of your hosts today, Benjamin Rangel, but I'm joined by...
Daisy España.
Yes, the one and only Daisy. And Daisy, we're here talking about the upcoming election. We are hosting an election special. It's been a while since we've done one of these, one of my favorite types of Bridge the City episodes. But I think this is your first election special, correct?
Very first one.
Well, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And so if voters don't know, sorry, if listeners don't know, which probably includes some voters, we have an election coming up in just a few weeks on Tuesday, April 2nd. And even though it is like presidential election season, it doesn't feel like as many people are talking about or thinking about elections and participating as it felt like in 2020. Is that just me or?
No, I think everybody has that same, shares the same feelings about that. For example, I hardly see any like push for like endorsements or candidates or people talking about the election. So at first I thought I was very disconnected, but I'm not disconnected.
Yeah. And even when we're preparing for this episode, we're like just spent the last hour plus trying to research. And part of the reason why Bridge the City exists and wants to do these election specials is because it's hard to find information about local elections and the nuances of things like referendums and so on and so forth. And so many of you have probably started getting ads on your YouTube or Hulu or whatever from Joe Biden or Donald Trump talking about the upcoming election and how one is terrible and the other is great and blah, 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 whatever those advertisements are saying nowadays. But we are here, as you all know, to talk about local elections. We like to think about the local here. And so what this episode is going to entail is just Daisy and I going back and forth talking about the upcoming election and specifically talking about different races that are happening here locally in the city and the county level, including some referendum. With that, I say it might be best to just jump into things, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so I'm going to start with the two of the three referendums that will likely be on your ballot. And so I will, full transparency, already voted, all right? I voted early. I don't want to risk it. I don't know what happened. I'm a busy guy, and so I always get my ballot ahead of time, and I already voted. And I will say, I teach U.S. government and politics. I think about elections a lot. And when I looked at these amendments to the Constitution, these two referendums, I was confused, I will say. And so there are two questions on the ballot related to constitutional amendments. And the first one is what's referred to as the use of private funds question. And it's essentially asking, should we amend the state constitution of Wisconsin to include a provision that says private donations and grants may not be applied for, accepted, expended, or used in connection with the conduct of any primary election or referendum? In other words, trying to not allow for private money to be used in elections, period. And so at first I'm thinking to myself, oh yeah, private money in elections, is this like a Bernie Sanders type thing where you don't want wealthy folks controlling or manipulating the election, right? I mean, that's sensible. I don't know where your mind went, Daisy, when you first read this. But turns out this question is an attempt to, according to some, and I should say a lot of what I'm getting comes from the nonpartisan League of Women Voters, who is advocating for people to vote no on question one and no on question two, because question one tries to outlaw the use of private funds. Question two, getting a little bit ahead of myself here. Okay, question two wants to provide that only election officials designated by law may perform tasks in the conduct of primaries. In other words, both question one and question two are trying to limit the amount of resources that are going to our elections here, whether it's resources in terms of money or resources in terms of people. And even though on the surface it might seem like, yeah, we want official election workers to be running the elections, it's like, yeah, but hold on a second. Elections take a lot of people, a lot of volunteers, a lot of energy and money from private nonprofits that want to advocate for civic engagement. And if you get rid of any non-official money, resources, people involved in elections, you make running elections really, really difficult, right? And so many progressive groups are saying no on question one and two, while the antithesis of that, you know, conservative groups are advocating for a yes vote, mainly to secure quote unquote elections without, you know, accounting for any additional resources that are needed to run those elections. Okay, so Daisy, that was a lot about the two referendums related to elections. There's another one on the ballot from MPS or about MPS. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so on April 2nd, on most of our ballots, whoever lives in Milwaukee,
yep,
right?
Who's ever in a Milwaukee public school district, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have a referendum to bring in essentially more money to Milwaukee public schools. And this is in response to the lack of money that they've received from the state. I think in general, Milwaukee County has not gotten their fair share from the state. And so it has just affected the public schools so much that now they're risking a bunch of layoffs and maybe even closing some schools. So they've chose to move to a referendum, which will essentially bring in a bunch of more money, but not close to what they should be receiving.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
And to longtime listeners of Bridge City know that the state has not maintained the same level of funding allocation to Milwaukee broadly over the last 20 years, essentially. But the same is true for Milwaukee public schools. And so this referendum is asking for more money. Yep. And unsurprisingly, Milwaukee Public School Teachers Union, the MTEA, right? And most supporters of MPS you might have seen these yard signs that have said, say yes to MPS. And it's something that the folks, the teachers union and folks who are supporters of MPS have been asking for people to vote yes for more money.
Yeah, and there have been many, I think, school districts or counties across the state of Wisconsin who have moved to referendums to receive additional funding for their schools.
It would bring in $252 million over the course of the next few years through 2028 school year. So yeah, Daisy, what are some of the things this $252 million would be used for?
This money would be used for career and technical education programs, attracting and retaining certified educators, and further improving art, music, and physical education and language programs as well.
Yeah. All good things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, necessary things, I feel like.
Yeah.
Basic. I wouldn't say like the word basic, but I mean, if you, like, people go to school.
Yeah, and we can actually dig in a little bit deeper on some of these numbers. So to begin with, Milwaukee property taxpayers would not be responsible for the full $252 million, but it would mean an increase of about $432 per year for an owner of a property worth $200,000, or just an additional $36 per month. Again, so if you own a property that is worth about $200,000, it would mean over the course of the next year, if this referendum is passed, you would pay about $432 more per year. One important note, too, is that when adjusted for inflation, this MPS tax levy wouldn't be near the levels it was in the early 1990s, and it would return to the same level it was in 2015. So although property taxes would increase for residents when adjusted for inflation, and when you zoom out and look at the historical context, it's not the highest the MPS tax levy has been in our city's history. Another quick note is that, as Daisy alluded to, MPS does need the money. Its revenue is at its lowest it has been in 20 years when you account for inflation. This has a lot to do with the drop of enrollment because of the increase in students opting into the choice program or the voucher system. Moreover, some point to Milwaukee Public Schools' per pupil spending being on par with the state average. Which is true, but that number doesn't take into account the unique socioeconomic demographics that exist in MPS. Data related to education outcomes are closely correlated with socioeconomic status, and so many other school districts across the country
And states like in Minnesota, for instance, or New Jersey, have moved to increase funding to low-income districts relative to high-income districts to account for that inequity. Lastly, public policy research consistently points to education funding as one of the most efficient uses of public dollars. In other words, when you invest in education, it ends up paying off in the long run. Some studies have shown the investment is 4-to-1, which means for every dollar you invest in education in your locality or in your district or in your area, it comes back fourfold through a more qualified workforce and a reduction in crime and other outcomes that are a result of inequitable education.
All right, so let's turn to something that many people probably have been paying attention to at least somewhat, which is the presidential preference or presidential primary election that also will be on the ballot on April 2nd. And you might be thinking, why are you even talking about it? We heard that Nikki Haley dropped out. We know that Biden pretty much has secured the nomination. Daisy, any ideas on why we'd be talking about this presidential primary vote? Isn't it like pretty much decided?
I mean, I think you can say that, but there is this, I would say, campaign going around the entire country, really, especially in swing states like Wisconsin, the uncommitted / uninstructed campaign, which is essentially to ask voters to vote uninstructed, uncommitted, which means that they really don't have a preference, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you have two candidates who are leading their party's primary elections, but because both candidates aren't well-liked across the board, I mean, there are Republicans who are obviously diehard for Trump, and there are Democrats who are strong supporters of Biden, right? But then there's a huge portion of voters who are unsatisfied with both options. And in particular, you have a group of Democratic voters who have been very dissatisfied with Biden's handling of the occupation of Gaza and the Palestinians by Israel. And so there is a little bit of a movement happening in Wisconsin, as there was in, I believe, Minnesota, where you have progressive Democrats advocating for voters to vote not for Biden, not for Trump, but as this kind of non-committed vote to demonstrate. It's sort of a protest vote, right?
Right.
They know it doesn't really mean anything in the long run, but it shows that, hey, there's a big group of progressives, usually progressives, who are dissatisfied with President Biden's handling of things.
Yeah, and I think it all started in Michigan. And in a few days, they were able to get 100,000 voters to vote uncommitted. And if you think about it, especially in swing states, like, presidential candidates win or lose by a certain margin. So 100,000 voters, like, can make or break the entire election. And I guess it depends on how many people vote uncommitted or uninstructed that they get to send delegates to the DNC, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's essentially sending a message to President Biden, and I guess President Trump too. I mean, yeah, former President Trump.
Yeah.
But it's sending a message saying to pretty much get their act together, mm-hmm. or they can like lose.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be interesting to see. I mean, all eyes on Wisconsin come November, but perhaps people paying attention here in April as well for that vote, despite things being seemingly wrapped up. Next, I just want to talk really briefly. On your ballot on April 2nd, you're going to see a bunch of Milwaukee County Circuit Court elections. Most of them are unopposed, which means there's literally one person running and no one else is running against them. I think people generally have feelings about those type of races. You're like, well, I literally don't have to choose between anyone. There's just only one person. And why aren't more people running? Great questions. If that's you, hey, run. Go ahead. Go for it. Right? Make people work for their jobs. But there are a few, for instance, Branch 43, Marisabel Cabrera and Rochelle and Johnson Bent running against one another. And so Marisabel is currently a state legislator, and so she's looking to perhaps serve in a different way. And pay attention to Branch 43, Milwaukee County Circuit Court. But other than that, I'm pretty sure all the other circuit court positions were uncontested. What else we got here, Daisy? Anything from the aldermanic side of things?
Yeah, we have a few. There's a few districts who are unopposed, like District 1, District 2, you've got the incumbent and nobody else running against them. But in District 3, incumbent Jonathan Rostov is being challenged by...
Oh, that's Aisha. That's Aisha Griffin. Aisha.
Okay,
she's the one who's running for everything.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. But it's a little fun to sometimes...
Yeah, yeah, she also ran for mayor. She also ran for county exec. So she might be on your ballot a few times. I think, you know, she's just really trying to serve her community in whatever way she feels called. I will say, even before we keep going for these aldermanic races, just a quick note for folks who forgot what the heck does an alder person do. You can check out some of our past episodes. We've interviewed quite a few alder people on the podcast. But generally, they are the main legislative body at the city level, right? And so their biggest responsibility is allocating funds, just like most legislative branches are, right? And so they have a city budget, and they're in charge of passing that budget once they get it from the mayor. And so they're also kind of the front lines of government, right? If you have a pothole in front of your house, if a stop sign gets hit by a reckless driver, if there are reckless drivers up and down your street and you want a speed bump, right? Think about the closest position that you, the closest government official to you is often your alder person. And so definitely pay attention to these aldermanic races. Okay, so Brostoff is running against Miss Griffin there. She's running for everything, but hey, power to her. I tell people to run for office if you want. And she got the signature. She's on the ballot. Who else is running?
So for District 4, Robert Bauman is running for re-election, and he's being challenged by Ray Nitti. And so...
Yeah, what are some things that Bauman... What is the most pressing issue, according to Robert Bauman, who most listeners probably remember his name and know his name. He's been in city politics for a while. So, according to WWM, who sent questions to candidates, this article that we found, great resource from WWM, Emily Files and Eddie Morales reporting there. Yeah, what did they say about Bauman and his most pressing concern?
Affordable housing. And this is like the first sentence of this, of his response, I believe. Mm-hmm. Affordable housing is critical to neighborhood stability, quality of life, and wealth creation.
Mm. And he talks about some of his work, right?
Right,
he's
yeah.
He's authored numerous legislation to increase affordable housing, revitalize neighborhoods, so on and so forth. What about Ray Nitti? What's one of his most pressing concerns?
I'm quoting this. As there are many pressing issues, I'd have to say the most pressing would be the public safety concerns. I plan on addressing it by dealing with the root causes of crime, which is addressing the poor conditions the city of Milwaukee has been living through.
I would say Bob Bauman is likely, like if you're a District 4 resident, Bob Bauman's more of the same. Ray Nitti is going to be a different person, a different elected official. But that's not saying anything good or bad about any of the candidates. It's just going to be different because Bauman's been in there for a long time. So you're going to give up some of that experience and wisdom around city politics in favor of someone maybe more innovative in thinking when it comes to addressing challenges. But it's up to you all. And you should definitely check out this WWM article to read more. All right, District 5.
Yeah, so District 5, Lamont Westmoreland was elected alderman of District 5 in a special election in 2023. He is facing Bruce Winter.
Yeah, so he's technically the incumbent, but has only been there for a little bit. He didn't respond to WUWM's questionnaire most recently, but in the past, what were some of the things he talked about?
He talked about reckless driving and how it has been a major issue in the city. He firmly believes that reckless driving is akin to wielding a 2-ton weapon.
Yeah, like your car is a weapon and we need to address it. And then he is against Bruce Winter, and I apologize for the laugh. We probably won't keep that in there, but just in case. Bruce Winter, what a guy. Check him out. When he was asked what he considered the most pressing issue in Milwaukee to be, what did he say?
The conditions on the road. No, I'm sorry. The conditions of the roads. And then he went to say, I would try doing preventative maintenance, such as
tarring
the cracks before winter.
Yeah, and I will say, this is interesting. Westmoreland referenced the actual reckless driving, and Bruce Winter is just talking about the roads themselves. Get rid of those potholes. He's really running on potholes. Yep. he did address, I will say, he addressed public safety and such and some other questions like having new traffic units to patrol the district more and so enforcement of current regulations and such. But interesting candidate. All right, so here we are on to District 6.
Alderwoman Coggs is facing a challenge from Brandon R. Payton. Alderwoman Coggs is the incumbent, and I believe she's been serving for quite some time.
Yeah, she's been there for a while, so very experienced, well known in her district in particular. And Brandon Payton, what did he say about the most pressing issue?
He said the most pressing issue is public safety. To address this issue, it's time to take action and make our community a better place for everyone by collaborating with constituents, community leaders, police departments, and religious groups. We will triumph over the challenges that threaten public security.
Okay, Brandon. All right, so stick with us here, folks. If you're listening and you're like, oh my gosh, how many races are there? There's quite a few aldermanic districts. There's a lot of races, but feel free to skip ahead a little bit to see what we're talking about after the aldermanic districts. If you're like, I don't have a race, a competitive race, I'm not in any of these districts. And I will say, if you don't know what district you're in, you are in, figure that out first. All right, District 7, we got Alderman Khalif Rainey, who is not running for re-election. And so there's an open seat there between Jessica Curry and DeAndre Jackson, who are both vying to replace him. So this was one of the more competitive primaries back in February. And so tell us about Jessica Curry. What does she say is the most pressing issue?
One significant challenge Milwaukee faces is economic inequality, which that's
true.
Very true. So now I'm intrigued to read more. She says, to contribute to the solution, I would advocate for policies promoting equitable economic development, support local businesses, and work towards creating job opportunities, particularly in underserved areas.
Yep, and she talks, not surprisingly, about public safety, reckless driving, gun ownership, all the things many of these candidates have talked about. And DeAndre Jackson, biggest challenge facing the city from his perspective is also jobs, so both economically focused. What else does he say?
He says that he'll focus on creating more apprenticeship opportunities, giving our youth the skills for strong careers.
Good. Yeah, so kind of similar platforms there in many ways. Good. And then we got District 8. District 8, Ryan Antsack is running against incumbent Jocasta Zamaripa. And tell us about Mr. Ryan there.
Yeah, well, I live in District 8, and he came knocking on my door asking for a signature, which, you know, we talked a little bit about those candidates who run for every single seat. And I will say that Ryan here, when he knocked on my door, he said he was running for every single seat, county supervisor, alderman, state rep. And so I believe he got kicked out of the ballot for county supervisor for filing something wrong. And so I guess, you know, he made it.
Yeah, he's on the ballot there for alderman. He's also ran for common council in 2020 and 2022.
I mean,
he didn't respond to WWN's candidate questionnaire. And the information we have of him is actually criticizing the judicial system and doesn't really have much to do with the legislature. But
yeah. And then Jocasta, she's, you know, she was a state rep. She's been for years in office. So I'm sure she'll pull through.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like Ryan might be a serious competitor here, but, you know, who are we to say?
Right, exactly.
If that's Ryan's true. Your guy, hey, we didn't mean to step on your toes. Right. Go ahead and vote for him.
District 10.
That's a big one.
Yeah. Richard Geldin and Charlene Moore.
Charlene Moore was actually on the pod before.
Yeah, I've met her. We've done a few things together, actually. Yeah. She was
Urban Underground.
Yes.
That's part of the reason why we interviewed her, was through her work with Urban Underground. So she's been working in the community for quite some time. Mm-hmm. Wants to address systemic inequalities, particularly in education and economic opportunities. Meanwhile, Richard gave his answers to a reporter over the phone, old school, and declined to provide a photo.
Great.
So we don't know what Richard looks like, but we know his answers. He says the new sales tax for the city of Milwaukee is the highest in the state of Wisconsin. After state mandates of the sales tax, what's left over? I want to use the sales tax revenue to reduce the fees on your water bill, streetlight fee, etc. This man is running on tax. Yes. And using that sales tax.
But he chooses to remain.
Pictureless.
Pictureless, yep.
You can make up however you think he looks. That's how he looks, okay? You can do that. All right, next we got District 11. Oh my gosh, there are so many freaking districts here.
I know.
All right, Alderman Mark Borkowski is not seeing re-election, which leaves the seat open for Peter Bergelis or Josh Zepnik. Peter Bergelis was on the pod as well in the past, full disclosure. And so what's Peter's main concern here?
Public safety is always number one.
Period. Economic factors and linked needs of housing. I don't really know what that means. Linked needs of housing. Okay. So public safety, number one, education, parenting resources, food security. He's got a long list of things that are on his mind. So that's Peter.
Yeah. And then he is a current county supervisor, correct?
Oh, I believe you. You yeah. know more than me. Okay.
I believe he is. So if you like him as a county supervisor and he's done his work and think you think he's going to be great for common council, that's your man.
That's your man. Or you could vote for Josh Zepnik, who did not respond to WWN's candidate questions. He's born and raised on Milwaukee's south side, though, nearly 20-year resident of District 11. Served in the legislature for, a long time, 16 years. Portions of that 16-year period. Anyways, he's been in and out of politics for some time. Lifelong resident of District 11. Consider voting for Josh. Check out some more of his issues online.
He actually lost to Marisabel Cabrera. I think she
You're right. For state legislature?
Yep.
Okay.
And I think he's tried to... He's another one of those running for every seat.
Mm-hmm.
I think he ran against my current county supervisor 2 years ago. And, you know, but props to him for...
Participating.
Yeah, exactly. That's democracy.
A for effort there. Next, you got a series of districts where there is no one running against the incumbent. And so keep that in mind. I mean, if you're in District 12, 13, 14, or 15, and you're like unhappy with the way city government is going, you can run against the person who's there right now. They don't even have anyone to run against. So, folks, we are way over time. And so I'm going to just zip through the rest here and just make sure you know what's on the ballot. We got Milwaukee County Board. There's a contested race in a few different supervisory districts, so keep that in mind. You got County Exec, but really David Crowley's the favorite there. I think it might be Aisha Griffin running against him. And so City Treasurer, I'm pretty sure that is not... Is no one running for City Treasurer? I don't think so. So City Treasurer unopposed. There is some competitive nature to the comptroller, both Milwaukee City Comptroller and the County Comptroller. If you're not familiar with what a comptroller is, you are in the majority. It is essentially like the city or the county's accountant. Okay, so they are the people. You might be thinking, well, what does the treasurer do? Yeah, look into it. There is a difference, but the comptroller is someone who needs to be trusted and reliable and has experience working with large sums of money. And so you have Gregory Grax, maybe is how you say his last name, running against Bill Christensen. And at the county level, you have Liz Sumner versus Michael Harper. And then finally, one of the more interesting races is Milwaukee City Attorney, because you got a guy named Tierman Spencer there running against Evan Goyke. Evan Goyke also been on the pod before. But Tierman Spencer, tell us about him, Daisy.
So you mentioned earlier that we were, you know, trying to dig up a few things, do some of our research. And so I did, right? And mm-hmm. So I love Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And as I was reading an article about current city attorney Spencer, you know, he's seeking re-election, of course. The very first thing that I read is that he misspelled fundraiser. And so I think if you really think about it and you are, you care a lot about grammar.
Spelling.
Yeah.
This is not your guy, perhaps.
Right. And I don't know.
I don't know how many single issue voters are out there who their issue is spelling. So Daisy, is there anything else we should know about Tierman?
Yes. So, okay. So maybe spelling you can forgive, right?
So Tierman Spencer, not a great speller, but perhaps a good candidate.
Perhaps.
Tell us more about him.
Yeah. So apparently he has been accused of harassing female staffers, battling with common council members. He fights a lot, and he, like I said, was accused of harassing female staffers. A state investigator found probable cause to believe he violated state labor laws by effectively forcing a female attorney out of his office after she reported that he had touched her inappropriately. And this, all this information I'm getting from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Yeah, I think, and I believe he has denied all these accusations. But if grammar is like,
if grammar is not enough, maybe some of that might maybe. Folks, let's just say that since he got into office, I feel like he has brought way more attention to the city attorney's office than any previous city attorney. And he's running against Evan Goyke, who again has been on Bridges City before. Full transparency, of course, we don't endorse any candidates here at Bridges City. Evan is a Wisconsin state rep, former public defender, and wants to be the next city attorney. Some of the big things he wants to bring to the office is transparency and accountability. Not surprising there. Reliable and accessible leadership. Again, getting back to what you said about Attorney Spencer's inability to like work with other city leaders, right? He wants to be accessible to the folks, and then running an efficient and effective office with quality customer service. So that is Evan Goyke. And with that, Daisy, the last thing we haven't talked about is the mayoral election, because I'm pretty sure that's not really going to be competitive either. So if you are thinking about who to vote for mayor, great. There are two people running. I believe David King and Cavalier Johnson. Yep. Cavalier is the incumbent and is heavily favored.
Yeah. And if you don't know who is on your ballot, have no idea about anything, you can go to myvote.wi.gov, put in your address. It'll tell you everyone who's on your ballot, and then you can do your own research.
Yeah, because there was a lot that we went through, and so we definitely understand that if you know, had to skip through a little bit. But again, Bridges City does not endorse any candidates, and we encourage everyone to do your own research. But hopefully this was helpful.
Hopefully.
While I have you all, make sure you visit patreon.com/Bridges City to become a supporter of Bridges City at just $4.14 a month. You can be a supporter of this important work, right? Yes. Because we might be the only people in the whole city talking about this dang election here.
Yeah.
Not quite. We got WWM, The Sentinel. There's a lot of good local journalists, but hopefully this is a added source of information and news for free. $3.99.
Yeah.
And so for as little as $4.14, become a supporter. With that, as always, reach out and let us know how you have helped
bridge the city.